Sunday night's main event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
WWE follows a battle royal with a battle royal? Brock is on his way back, and CM Punk and MJF take the wrestling world to promo school. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sunday night's main event. We are Canada's wrestling radio program, powered by Great Lakes Beer, and coming at you across the country on TSN Radio and the iHeartRadio Talk Network. Kicking off tonight's show, we'll chat with Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter about the fact that it's going to take five men to replace Kenny Omega at Triple Mania. How will AEW present a battle of the belts in just 1 hour? And Jim Ross is taking a break from pro wrestling due to health issues. Then, a new addition to the Sunday night's main event team, Mike McGuire, joins me in the second half of the show. Mike is a grizzled radio veteran, and considering we've both been paid to talk all of our lives, I'm sure we'll get into how envious we are of the verbal skills of MJF and CM Punk, and we'll also touch on WWE's repetitive Battle Royal booking and take a look ahead at the upcoming NXT War Games card. Plus, we've got another edition of Turnbuckle Trivia on the week, focusing on the week that was and what people remember. That is all to come over the next hour, but if an hour isn't enough, remember we've got podcasts each and every day delivered right to your inbox. All you have to do is sign up at patreon.com/SNMEradio. It's only $1 a week, that's $4 a month. Sign up right now and get all the content. patreon.com/SNMEradio. A break and then back with Dave Meltzer. You're listening to Sunday night's main event.
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider. With Dave Meltzer on Sunday night's main event.
Welcome back to Sunday night's main event. Let's get into the news of the week, as we are always joined by Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. And Dave, it looks like the quote-unquote suspension has been lifted. Brock Lesnar appearing on SmackDown this week. Bigger thing for me coming out of this, though, Dave, is does it look like we get Reigns and Lesnar at Royal Rumble then? Because I had initially thought it was programmed for WrestleMania.
I thought it was WrestleMania. I have not heard different. But yeah, it does seem that you would want to bring them back closer to Rumble. Right before the Rumble, you know, and have him win the Rumble, perhaps.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's a way to get him in the Rumble and have Roman Reigns face somebody else. I can't imagine it being Sami Zayn, though, you know, because they have to do the day one pay-per-view. And I don't even know if he's going to be in the day one pay-per-view. I'm not sure that that's a singles match they're going to do on TV in the next week or two.
Jeez, so, Dave, you know, you forgot about day one last week. I'm sitting here, I completely forgot about it this week, focusing on the Rumble. I feel like if you and I have both kind of passed over this in the past 2 weeks, this might be a bit of a tough sell for WWE.
Well, they haven't really gone hard on it, and they do have a number of weeks left, but they do have to... They do have to start promoting it in at least a week. I mean, one of the things that I've noticed with them is that because it's on Peacock, when it comes to these pay-per-views, they really get into promoting them late, you know, because they don't have the need to get people to buy pay-per-views individually. So they've gotten in this thing where, you know, even Rumble, I thought, you know, as far as television promotion of, not Rumble, of Survivor Series was very...
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's like a major show. And day one, it's interesting because, it's January 1st. That's a real easy day with all the football and just being January 1st for people to just kind of skip unless it's like a major show. But I can't see, the biggest match in wrestling right now is Reigns and Lesnar, but I can't see it being on January 1st. To me, it's like you would want a match like that on January 1st, but you don't have a lot of them. Obviously, they're doing a storyline with McIntyre, trying to keep him away from the situation. So maybe he's the guy for Rumble, because that's 2 months away. And, and then they do, like, in the Lesnar-McIntyre winner faces Brock type of a thing, or Brock in the Rumble. I mean, I could see it going that way, or maybe, Yeah, I mean, I couldn't see, you know, that seems to make the most sense right now.
Reigns also alluded to the fact that he may not be around for as long as you think. That's an interesting comment to just toss out there on WWE television.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's like, I think in his mind, he's following the same route as Cena and Dwayne, where he's going to do his wrestling, be a big, big star, and then move to Hollywood. And, you know, Cena's done that successfully.
Yeah.
And Reigns is, I think, 36 now. So, you know, at that age, you know, and he's probably feeling, you know, I'm sure he's feeling all the bumps. And also, you know, remember, he played football for all those years, too.
And overcame cancer on top of that, right?
Twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it makes you think. But, I mean, here's the one thing. It's like, at least when Cena left, everyone knew Reigns was going to be the guy. And whether you think he's been successful in that role or not, he is clearly the biggest star that they have. And if he goes, you know, who becomes that guy? I mean, is it McIntyre? You know, I mean, I don't know. I don't sense it's going to be Big E, especially, you know, after watching Survivor Series. It just felt like Big E was very clearly, okay, he's the champion of the brand, but he's not the guy. Bobby Lashley's in his, you know, mid-40s already, so he's not going to be the future.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I mean, you know, Damian Priest is being protected, but it doesn't. I don't know. I mean, it's
hey,
a big
he's older too, Dave. He's in his late 30s too.
He's older than Roman.
Yeah,
Reigns.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So it's like, so who's it going to be? I mean, Austin Theory's young, but he's still like in a comedy role.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Riddle's in a total comedy role. He could have been a top guy. Does that mean we go back to Randy Orton, who's 40 years old already, or 41? I don't know.
Well, Bron Breakker, we'll see what happens there. That seems to be the hot name in the company right now.
I mean, I certainly would say that he's got a ton of potential, but, you know, there's a huge difference between a guy who is hot coming out of the chute and a guy to carry an entire company. And we haven't seen him do, the promos work. We haven't seen him having to wrestle a 20-minute main event. And, I mean, it'd be asking a lot to do it at this stage of his career. I mean, I think the potential is there for him to be a top guy, but, I mean, it's a little early to decide he's the guy.
Let's talk a bit about Seth Rollins. Not too much here, but the attack on Monday Night Raw is extremely scary. This guy, Elijah Spencer, number one, security drops the ball here, and also this guy is dangerous because he's operating at such a low IQ level to this point. So what's the ramifications here? He's been banned for life? I don't even know what that means, Dave.
Has he been banned for life?
I don't know. I thought I heard that.
I haven't heard that, and I don't even know how you actually can do that.
Exactly.
Because it's like, is there going to be a photo of him to like all the ticket takers? He's not allowed in, or, you know, he can't buy a ticket under another name. I mean, in theory, I would think he should be banned for life from attending WWE events. I mean, Rollins said that, and I would agree with that if you can pull that off. You know, he was arrested and everything, and, security dropped the ball. I mean, the guy had like a 30-yard head start. When you watch that film, it's just like, you know. But, you know, he came from an area where I'm sure that the security just goes, he must be part of the show.
Yep.
And even the camera people and the announcers, you know, thought it must be for a split second. So I can see why it happened, but man, that was like, you know, it wasn't like a guy hopped the rail and boom, he was there. It was like there was a lot of, you know, not a lot of lead time, but there was more than enough lead time that he never should have gotten to Seth.
Yeah, Seth is extremely lucky in that situation that it was just him and not him with a weapon.
Really.
Let's, the Ric Flair story, Ric Flair claiming he'll never go back to WWE because he's upset that Nick Khan removed the woo from the intro in favor of the Ultimate Warrior. Well, I mean, I'd be upset if I was removed in favor of the Ultimate Warrior as well, but this just seems, crazy to blame Nick Khan.
Yeah. I mean, that's Nick Khan's role is to be the bad guy. You know, and Vince has always had that.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, you know, there's always, you know, Jim Ross and J.J. Dillon and John Laurinaitis and, you know, they've always had that thing where somebody else is the bad guy, but Vince loves me. And, you know, this is another example of it. I mean, obviously, Nick Khan could make that suggestion, but at the end of the day, that's Vince. You know, every decision is Vince's decision. Vince McMahon owns the company. Nick Khan is, you know, going to make suggestions, and I don't even know that he made that suggestion. I mean, The one thing I do know about Nick Khan, okay, is that he is very much, because of before he became an agent, he was in criminal law, and he's very much a believer in innocent until proven guilty. And, you know, Ric Flair, you know, I mean, there's certainly those allegations, but there's never even been charges, let alone, you know, a conviction on anything on Ric Flair. So, you know, for him, it would not fall within his usual frame of mind for him to be that upset, because, I mean, you know, he hired people that are working WWE's executives that a lot of people, when they were hired, because they, you know, one of the guys got booted from, I believe it was ESPN, who had, you know, multiple accusations of sexual harassment, and that's why he was booted. He hired him. He hired a guy like that who had been publicly fired for things. So it's like his, he could have said that. He could have said, hey, we need to take him out of the open. I might have said that, you know, take him out of the open, just based on it. So it's a fight you don't need to be doing right now. You don't need to be doing that if people are going to be outraged. I mean, the thing where you replace him with Ultimate Warrior, I mean, it's a weird thing anyway. You know, it's like Ultimate Warrior somehow is okay, even though, you know, we know his past, right?
Oh, boy, do we.
You know, and there's probably many, many others in that open, you know, but Rick, you know, Rick's thing was recent on television on Dark Side of the Ring, and, you know, that's how it gets done. Not to justify anything with Rick, because other people are bad, but yeah, the irony of it being Ultimate Warrior that replaces him is you know, kind of weird when you think about it, for sure. Yeah,
very present. All right, let's can we get an update on the health of Triple H? We heard about the heart condition, and he was just kind of removed from everything in the new regime. But how's things going?
I mean, he was cited at the, Vince McMahon and others from other executives were there. You know, they're moving into a new office building, you know, a new giant office building. And he was there, you know, while they're doing some work on it and things like that. But, I mean, he's pretty much out of it. I mean, his situation, I mean, without going into detail on it, it was very serious. Very, very, very serious, you know. And, you know, he's not back, and I don't know. You know, I mean, he's around. He can talk to people and everything like that. But there's a lot of stress in doing what he was doing, an incredible amount of stress. I don't know when he'll be back. I don't know if he'll be back. I suspect that he will be back in some form at some point. It's not like saying, oh, he's never coming back. I'm not saying that. But I don't, like, have a timetable or if he will be put back in that high-stress situation.
Jim Ross also taking time off. This seems to have a return date, at least if it can go as planned. He looks to return at the end of December. But, JR, this is, once again, a cancer scare.
Skin cancer. He starts radiation therapy tomorrow for 22 straight days. And I know he wanted to work through it, but, you know, I think that he had surgery on his back on Monday, not back, you know, to remove cancer from his back, skin cancer. And he did work the show Wednesday. I know he was feeling really sore. It was a tough trip. And I think that maybe, you know, he's got a very strong mentality of always wanting to work, you know. And I think that that got him to Chicago. But I think that maybe there was the realization that, you know, you just... you just can't push yourself when it comes to this. And again, yeah, I mean, he's targeting December 29th because Jacksonville, he lives in Jacksonville. So there's no travel involved as there would be these other weeks. And hopefully, you know, he gets through it and it's one round and it's done and we don't have to worry about it again. That's what we should all hope for. And yeah, I would look forward to seeing him back on December 29th.
Yeah, wishing JR all the best, of course. Kenny Omega also taking time off, and off Triple Mania as well, stripped of the title, and it's going to take five guys to replace Kenny Omega. A five-way here that's happening, including Bandido in this match, Jay Lethal, Bobby Fish being lent over from AEW, and the former Kalisto from WWE in here.
Yeah, and El Hijo del Vikingo,
mm-hmm,
yeah. Yeah, it's weird, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a world title match. I think that they wanted to do some sort of an international thing, but it's just weird. Like, of all the guys in AEW, it's Jay Lethal and Bobby Fish. You know, it's just like, you know, they're good wrestlers, and it's probably going to be a good American wrestling match because they're not, neither of them are luchadors, although Bobby Fish can work with luchadors, and Jay Lethal's can be pretty acrobatic. But it's, you know, and Bandito's, you know, really phenomenal and charismatic and everything like that. But yeah, it's a weird, you know, Kalisto, you know, was a guy who was in, you know, Samurai Del Sol is the name he's going by back, which is his original name. He's really good, but it's like he wasn't even pushed in WWE, and it's like for your world title, and it's just a weird mix of guys. That's, I mean, it's like I can't give any rhyme or reason for it, that's for sure.
Let's talk AEW Battle of the Belts, a special announced January the 8th. I think it's, you know, a fun concept, Dave, but how do you get that done in only an hour of a TV special?
Yeah, I don't understand, like, the concept of it, because we've already shown that Saturday night, when they put Dynamite on Saturday night, it's a really tough night for them to draw. And, like, the quarterly TV specials, you know, because this thing was modeled after Clash of the Champions, but as I recall, Clash of the Champions, they were usually 2.5-3 hours. They were not, certainly not 1 hour, and not even two. And once we had Nitro, Clash of the Champions really started fading out as being important, and eventually was dropped, because when you've got a 2-hour Nitro with all kinds of main event matches, the idea, like, you remember, like, Clash of the Champions was really big when television was filled with squash matches.
Right, of course.
And you know, and you got a main event, sort of a pay-per-view caliber, or close to a pay-per-view caliber card. And now, I mean, you get that, you get those kind of matches every week on television.
Yep.
And it's more. And you know, there's so much content on television. It's not like people are looking for more. Like, if they did a pay-per-view caliber card for 3 hours on a Saturday night that was like a pay-per-view, it'd be one thing. And, you know, like a mini pay-per-view, but just to do it, even if you've got a really big match, I mean, we'll have to see how it plays out. But yeah, 1 hour, to me, you know, it's like when I heard 1 hour, I was, oh man, I'm disappointed. And it's not 100% 1 hour, but it certainly was. And when I talked to Tony Khan about it, he was like, it's 1 hour right now. I mean, I certainly, the way he said it made me think he's trying to get it moved to two, but, you know, it's not his call.
And finally, Dave, sticking with AEW, we saw a tremendous promo this week. MJF and Punk just taking the wrestling world to school with this thing. I was completely entertained, even though it was very long. It didn't bother me. When do you expect the culmination of this feud?
Feels like a pay-per-view match, and that's March. That's why, like, we're really early in the build.
Yeah.
You know, Winter is Coming is way too soon. Could, you know, Battle the Belts, but it's not a championship match. But could it be that night, maybe with a world title match, two-match show? Yeah, I could see that. I mean, timing-wise, if you're building it now, January 8th feels about right. You know, March, the first week of March feels, you know, way too long when you've already built it like this. Just to put it on a random Dynamite show, I mean, you could do it. I mean, they put Kenny Omega and Jon Moxley on a Dynamite show. And maybe that's the idea, is have a big, you know, maybe the first show on TBS, January 5th. I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
I could really see that, actually.
That's not a bad idea at all. All right, well, we'll let the speculation continue. Dave, that's great for this week. Observer-wise, what you got? What should we be looking for?
Just coverage of everything. You know, I mean, it's kind of a slow weekend, but I probably look into a lot of Stardom and maybe some Hall of Fame stuff. And, yeah, you know, just, I guess, like, maybe more clarification on the direction of AEW with some of these big shows coming up. And, you know, a lot about, you know, we'll definitely be covering all the ticket sales, which I should mention, you know, there's been a lot of shows that have been put on sale in the last week or two. And while there are exceptions, and this goes for both WWE and AEW, it is disappointing to me, these early advance numbers. They're not, you know, because from July coming back, it's generally been good. Some of the WWE Raws have been disappointing. Most of the, you know, Dynamites have been good. Most of the SmackDowns have been good. you know, the pay-per-views have done well, although, you know, Barclays was a little, you know, it wasn't a sellout or anything, but there's still a lot of people. But, yeah, like the WWE Christmas week, but sometimes I feel like, well, that'll get a big jump late. But then a lot of these January shows, you know, in AEW's got some big ones, and WWE's got some big ones, and they're not knocking them out of the park, and this includes, like, Chicago's and places where, you know, it's not like a Raleigh where you go, okay, it's a bad city. I mean, these are in, you know, New York's and Chicago's. It's not knocking them through the roof.
Well, I know WWE's coming up and doing a big swing up here in Canada as well, but...
Toronto's doing well.
Toronto's doing well. Well, they're going right across Canada, and we'll see what happens. All the talk of the new variant as well, the Omicron variant from coronavirus, is not necessarily great for the world, but we'll follow that along. Hopefully it doesn't shut things down again, but apparently wrestling never stops. Dave, appreciate you hanging out this week, and we'll talk to you next week at the same time.
Okay, have a great week.
Dave Meltzer, WrestlingObserver.com, where you can find all of his fine work. He joins us every week here on Sunday night's main event. A break, back with some trivia of the week that was, and then Mike McGuire later in the show to join us on the show and join the troupe of SNME Radio. That is all to come right here on Sunday night's main event.
One-on-one and get it done. Sunday night's main event presents.
Everybody hands go up.
Turnbuckle Trivia.
And they stay there. And they say yeah. And they stay there.
Turnbuckle Trivia time here on Sunday night's main event. We have two very dedicated players on the show today, both returning. Now, Anthony from Toronto. Anthony, you're dedicated enough to sneak outside from work, correct?
Well, I'm on a break, so yeah, being a manager helps.
I was trying to make it a little bit more dramatic. So you've taken a break in order to play, so hopefully you get a win from taking this break. Now, your opponent has literally just got off a flight, is driving home, there was a delay. Are you in a snowbank right now, Barry from North Carolina?
Well, I'm from South Carolina now. Oh, it's warm here.
Oh, it's warm there. I'm sorry, but you came from New York, right, where it was snowy?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
All right, good stuff. Well, no snow in South Carolina, of course. My apologies. Do you get offended when people confuse North and South?
Sometimes.
All right.
It's the Carolinas. Okay. It's all right.
He's already angry at me. Well, let's get into it, guys. Here we go. Anthony versus Barry. It's Turnbuckle Trivia. One of you is going to be winning one of our fun t-shirts from ballergear.ca. So let's get into it. Five questions each, and we're going to talk about what you guys watched this week, or did you watch... Barry's been on the road. It's already an uh-oh. Anthony, first question is for you. Your player won. On Monday, we saw the culmination of the Survivor Series storyline. The biggest angle on it. Anthony, who stole the egg?
Oh, good Lord. I heard about that stupid egg. Hornswoggle. I don't know.
You know what? I wouldn't have put it by him. I thought Gobbledygooker was coming out, and it was Austin Theory, yeah. But you said Hornswoggle, so incorrect on that one. To Barry now. Barry, the egg, because I got to do trivia about the egg, was product placement from what Ryan Reynolds and The Rock movie?
Red Notice?
Red Notice is correct. Very good. Have you seen it?
I haven't.
It's not good. Anthony, have you seen it?
No.
Yeah, don't. All right, Anthony, to you. Along with Red Notice, what other product placement did WWE do at Survivor Series during the 25-man Battle Royal?
Oh, good Lord. I saw half of the Survivor Series. I wasn't even paying attention.
See the Battle Royal?
No, I think I stopped up until the Damian Priest match. It was just boring. I couldn't watch the show.
All right. Well, that was the first match of the night, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was not.
You came up. That was the pre-show. You're buzzed out. Pizza Hut is the correct answer. That's amazing. I got to the Damian Priest match and I got out. Hey, let's go back to Barry here. Barry, who won that Survivor Series Battle Royal?
Almost.
Almost is correct. Very good. Was that a guess?
That was a guess.
Oh, boy. All right, Anthony, to you. Who won the number one contender battle royal on SmackDown this week?
Why am I going to say Shinsuke Nakamura for some reason?
Because you want the wrong answer. That is incorrect. Sami Zayn won after they almost gave your Carolina boy there, Jeff Hardy, the win, Barry, but they didn't.
I saw that.
Yeah, he'd already won once, so he can't win twice in his hometown. Here's your question, though, Barry. Who had not won, but two pies put in their face on SmackDown? Barry, guess.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was Toni Storm had two pies in her face. Anthony, back to you. That does still leave you open here to be able to win or at least tie. Here's your question. In the epic CM Punk MJF promo, what did CM Punk say that MJF was an acronym for?
Oh, I know. I saw this promo.
It was great. Anthony, that's 5 seconds. You're buzzed out, my friend. It is my jealous fan.
Fan
is what MJF has stood for.
And that was the best promo I saw all week. I can't remember.
That's the best promo in years, and you couldn't remember it. And that means congratulations, Barry, from South Carolina. It was worth the flight. It was worth pulling over for. A t-shirt from ballergear.ca on the way to you. Congratulations, Anthony. We'll have you back for the tournament. Guys, thank you very much for playing the game. Thanks for being patrons. We'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate it. Happy holidays, guys.
Safe driving.
Love the dedication. We got a guy on the road and we got a guy at work, and they both take time out to play turnbuckle trivia. Thanks very much, guys. All right, we have got to take a break. When we come back, the newest addition to the Sunday Night's Main Event family joins me next to talk about the week that was in wrestling. He is the grizzled radio veteran. He's been up and down the dial, Mike McGuire. We'll get an introduction and we'll talk about this week's wrestling in and outside of the ring. McGuire joins me next right here on Sunday Night's Main Event. Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event. Final block of the show is where we welcome one of the pundits of SNME Radio to join me and chat about the week that was, that we watched, that you watched, or maybe you didn't, because sometimes we watch bad wrestling, so you don't have to. Joining me this week, from Saskatchewan, a grizzled radio veteran joining the team, Mike McGuire. Mike, I think every wrestling fan's first question to you is going to be, how close do you live to Brock Lesnar?
Oh, brother. Well, as a grizzled radio veteran, let me tell you the story going up and down the road.
Not that close.
Okay.
I used to live closer to him. He's down closer to the southern part of the province. I'm in Saskatoon, which is kind of dead upper central area. But yeah, there were, when I was doing radio in Regina, actually, there were Brock Lesnar sightings in Regina all the time. And everybody knowing that I was a big wrestling fan, I would get these random texts at the radio station or even on my Facebook and my phone saying, Brock Lesnar's at this store right now. And I would always be like, I've never met the guy. I would love to meet the guy. He's good friends with our former premier here, Brad Wall.
Oh, boy.
And Brad is an interesting fella who very down to earth. I've met him a bunch of times. I'm trying to slide in the conversation of, hey, next time you and Brock are hanging out, you know, give me a call sort of thing. But yeah, it hasn't happened yet.
I you know what I'm surprised at? That Sable / Rena Mero / I guess maybe she uses Lesnar now, I don't know, completely disappeared. Like, when was the last time you remember seeing her? Because I can't.
Actually, I saw a photo of her and Brock and some youth hockey players in the town near his farm. He had donated a bunch of gym equipment and a bunch of workout gear to these minor hockey kids. And so it was a photo of him and her together. And she still looks great. I mean, I hate that we jump to that because, oh, yeah, she still looks good,
right,
you know.
Right.
But I mean, she looks well. She looks happy, content. You know, he was obviously had a smile on his face. They're doing a good thing. And yeah, I mean, I think they're very happy being out of the spotlight when they don't have to be in it. And I think Brock just does it when he wants to work, you know?
All right. So far we've talked about the Prairies, hockey, the premier of Saskatchewan's name. We've dropped. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Former. That's right.
Yeah.
We're going to get to Tim Hortons at some point in here to keep.
We got to talk about the Riders then at some point too.
Oh,
but
boy.
And then, maybe, Yeah, no, we don't. It's fine.
Get out of here. Let's talk about, let's kick in here and talk about what I thought was one of, I mean, it's got to be my moment of the year in pro wrestling. And it was a long moment, to say the least. Listen, MJF versus Punk, a promo battle. You know, you're listening to two guys that have made their living speaking into a microphone. I'm jealous at how great these guys are. I can't say anything bad about this. This, to me, was an ultimate reward for watching wrestling and knowing the references. Some people have said, though, maybe too inside, maybe too many WWE references. What was your take?
It's a little inside. And the funny thing is, one of my best friends was just over the other day and we were talking about something else. And I wanted to show him the MJF Punk promo because it was so good. And because if you're like me, you're a wrestling fan, you got the same vibe you're talking about. Holy, what a hit. Just knockout after knockout on both sides.
Yeah.
And he's not as big of a fan as I am. I even asked him, I said, do you know who The Miz is? And he goes, not really.
Oh.
And so I was like, okay, well then you wouldn't get any of this, so don't worry about it. But it's one of those things where it was definitely inside. It's definitely, like what you said, a reward for being a longtime wrestling fan. Does it alienate the plebs, if you would, the plebeians of the world who don't follow as closely as we do? A little bit, I think so. If you were just a person in the crowd, you don't get all the inside punches. But at the same time, I mean, I can liken this to the Olympic curling trials were just here in Saskatoon, and you don't have to be a curling fan if you're in that crowd to get excited about what's going on around you. And so I think if you were a fan that came with a diehard, or if you were a friend that came with a diehard, or dare I say a partner, you probably felt like you were having a good time watching it on TV. Yeah, there would be a lot of explaining to do.
I can't believe that you just related wrestling back to curling. We have hit a whole new level of Canada on this show.
Good day, eh?
do you think, though, because I will full on say no to this, but do you think there was too many WWE references? I actually thought that it was a good thing. I thought the Miz thing was, you know, as they maybe try to pull away fans from WWE, mentioning Cena, the alluding to Triple H, the mentioning of The Miz, which was just a murderous insult. I actually liked all of those and thought they were all very well done and actually very cerebral, dare I say it, after referencing Triple H.
Well, that's just it. They weren't as low-hanging a fruit as you think, because
right,
they were all done very well, and they were done in a way that acknowledges the success of who they're talking about, but at the same time, I felt didn't put it over. Like they said flat out, you're a less famous Miz. So Miz is established. People know he's just on Dancing with the Stars. That brings a whole new audience, everything else, right? So everybody knows who John Cena is.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to go that deep to figure out what hustle, loyalty, and respect, or you can't see me means.
Right.
So there, they're establishing, yes, these guys are great. These are wonderful performers, but they're not saying that's the be all end all. That's not what you want to be. You want to be the next MJF. You want to be the first MJF. You want to be the best MJF. You don't want to be a lesser Miz, you know?
Yeah.
So I think listing all the WWE references was fantastic.
Yeah. I thought it was done in a very different way, because that was always one of the criticisms of Impact was, you know, they'd bring in guys who were maybe in the mid card and they'd fire them right up to the top. And all of a sudden, Christian Cage, who's a mid-carder on WWE, is winning the championship in Impact. And yes, I know he just did it again, but nonetheless. But like, that was a big criticism, and I don't find AEW doing that. I mean, you can say what you will about Bryan Danielson and CM Punk, but those are two giant stars of the modern era from WWE.
Yeah, there's really no comparison here anymore. Like I said, WWE had this thing where they would ignore the past completely, and they still do to the most part, whereas TNA would say, hey, you got rid of this guy, we're going to show you how much better they are. And I don't know, I always loved Christian Cage's title runs. I thought that he did a great job. I loved him when he was world champion in WWE. But you're right, there was an essence where they would be like, hey, look at how good they really are. AEW is getting these WWE talents while they're still that good. Uh-huh. And they're at that level, that is next level. So you're getting CM Punk, who everybody's been wanting for 70. You're getting Bryan Danielson, who just main evented WrestleMania. They're still up there, and they are upper card, top of the card, mainstream names in a lot of ways. So I think AEW is doing it right, where they're not giving too much credit to former WWE talents coming in. They still have to earn their stripes, but they also know a superstar when they see one.
Let's talk Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes is in a very interesting situation. You know, we mentioned John Cena in what we were just talking about, and Cody Rhodes is starting to feel a lot like the John Cena of AEW. Fans half are booing him, half are cheering him. He's a guy who's, you know, one of the founders who started this thing, was a star. People couldn't get enough of him, and now there's a bit of the turn. But Cody refusing to turn heel also paralleled what John Cena does in the past. Now, Mike, I find that the problem is, if he does go heel, then the whole crowd will be cheering him.
See, and I don't get all the hate on Cody. I think the reality show probably didn't help. But I think there has been this intentional smugness he's been portraying to get that reaction. This is the same guy, we have to remember, who went around to every indie that would book him. He wrestled here, for goodness sake, in Saskatoon, and put over one of our great talents here. Same in Alberta, did a great match there, and did a thing to elevate all these talents when he went on his big indie tour. And how soon we fans forget that that's the same Cody that now has his logo tattooed on his neck, and has shows where they talk about the birthing process and everything. But to me, that's all just part of the package. Make money while the iron's hot, you know, strike while the iron's hot sort of thing. And he's capitalizing on it. Why fans are tired of it, I don't know. But I never understood why people hated Cena so much, except for the fact that it became the same match after a while. I mean, we had Hogan, and we'll go back and say we were Hulkamaniacs at one point. We had Flair is argued to be one of the greatest of all time. Same match every time, right? But it's that time now for Cody to really break out on his own one way or another. And I think that there is a boiling point for it. I agree with you. I don't think there's going to be a full heel turn, because then he'll have that polarizing effect. But I don't know. I think if you're still talking about him this much, he's doing something right.
TBS Championship Tournament is something that we haven't talked about much on the show as of yet. Thunder Rosa advances to the semifinals of the tournament, where she's going to face Jade Cargill. The other semifinal match will have Nyla Rose face off against the winner of the match between Chris Statlander and Ruby Soho. Best case scenario here, I mean, I have been wanting Thunder Rosa to be at the top of the mountain in this women's division for a long time, but ultimately I think she's got to beat Britt Baker for that title. I don't want to see her with the secondary title, and I definitely don't want to see her with this title and then do title versus title, because, well, why are you having a second title if you're doing that? So who do you think comes out of this? Who's best case scenario to have this belt?
See, and I am diehard Thunder Rosa. I met Thunder Rosa. She actually worked a Regina show for us. Nobody knew who she was. She had just been popping up in Ring of Honor, and I've seen how hard she works and how hard she hustles since then. So to see her where she's the talk of the industry, and don't be fooled for a second, she is the talk of the industry. Like, everybody is talking Thunder Rosa. It's hard to not want her to be the first champion. What I see, if anything, Jason, and maybe you'll agree with this, maybe you won't, I think she needs that title to establish the title. I think this is like a Finn Balor being first Universal Champion sort of situation. You need someone who everybody knows, everybody's in love with. Have her win it, have her get screwed out of it somehow, and then move on. This can be her Intercontinental to World Championship sort of bridge. You know what I mean? Like all the greats who were IC champion would then move on to the World Champion scene, and you can still do that transition. But yeah, I do agree with you. The money is definitely with Britt down the road.
And I'm not sure if everyone knows who Finn Balor is. I don't know if I can give you that one, Mike.
Wow.
Okay, so you're saying, in this case, I see what you're saying. The person is going to make the title.
Yes, and absolutely.
The strongest person, as far as establishing themselves and the AEW fan base, is Thunder Rosa. I am not going to disagree with you there. Or, on the other hand, does the title make the person? And believe it or not, the person who I think might be right for the title, if that is the way you look at this, is Jade Cargill.
Yeah, and I can see that too. I mean, she's getting pushed to the moon right now, yeah, which makes sense. I mean, that was the start of her with the whole Shaq thing and everything. We had no idea who she was, and she's cutting promos against Cody back in the quarantine era, you know? Let's not discount the fan love for Ruby Soho, though, and Ruby would be another one who I could see legitimizing the title.
Okay.
So the question, I guess, becomes, do you want to legitimize the title, or do you want to legitimize the star holding the title? And I guess that's what we have to wait and find out, what they decide to do with it.
I think we've all, the two of us have just agreed, Chris Statlander is not winning this title.
Which I pick your favorite child here, you know, like, what do you do here?
All right, let's flip over to the world of WWE. We got a Black Friday Battle Royal to determine Reigns' next contender. We literally saw a Battle Royal less than a week ago. Mike, I mean, we are roughly the same age, and I don't know if you were as giddy as I was when I was a kid, but I'm going to get real deep into nostalgia here. I'd literally go to the video store. I'd go to the wrestling rack, and I'd look for the Coliseum home videos that had Battle Royals on it, and that is what I would rent, because I love Battle Royals, because you got to see everybody.
You could see everybody, exactly.
This was so boring. Completely meaningless. Both of them, though. Like, we just saw almost destroy everybody at Survivor Series, and we follow this up with another Battle Royal here for no reason. This Battle Royal, I think, might have been put in place just to put Drew McIntyre not in it.
Agnew, they totally advertised beforehand, okay? It was a Black Friday Battle Royal. What are your Black Friday specials? All the things you have too many of. Clearly, they had a surplus of Battle Royals in the back. They're like, okay, we're going to put a Black Friday one out. Let's do that. You know, I get it. And full disclosure here, Jason sent a little bit of notes here. My favorite line that you sent here is Drew McIntyre inexplicably left out and then tries to kill everyone with a sword.
Right? I hate that, though. Listen, I'm okay with a table, a chair, a blunt object. You can't bring a sword. You can't be Tank Abbott and bring a knife. Like, you can't. That's a deep reference there. You can't.
No kidding.
You can't do that. Like, it just takes away from it for me. Put the damn sword down. Put it away at ringside. And now what they're doing again, Mike, even the bigger issue here is authority figure trying to keep Drew McIntyre babyface down.
Yeah. I don't get when they all of a sudden became the authority. I don't know what the captive audience reaction is to what are Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville going to do next. This isn't the McMahons. We don't know. We know they don't own the company. It's not as big of a thing, but I guess they're going back to the old trope because it's worked before. Keeping Drew out of the Battle Royal, to what end? What's the point here? We should have strong contenders going for the title, and nothing against Montreal's finest and Sami Zayn, because love the guy more than I can ever explain. But where does that go now? Where does this all end up? Does he get destroyed by Brock? Yeah, or?
I think it's pretty obvious. He gets absolutely destroyed by Brock. I don't even know what you do, because he wins and maybe he's celebrating. Brock comes out. I don't even know. You know, this could be one of those things where Sami Zayn never even gets a title shot. He comes out, is talking, Brock comes out, and Brock challenges, and then all of a sudden, we never even hear about it again.
Right. Right, and Sammy's conspiracy documentary gets a part two.
There you go. Yep.
I love it.
The NXT War Games is coming up. They're doing something kind of interesting. Now, NXT has fallen off the radar for most, and I will full-on include myself. If you love NXT, we still cover it on Sunday Night's Main Event. Boris and Matt have to do that. Which they were
they
very
do a great job, though.
They do a great job. Again, we watch things so you don't have to, and they do that each and every week. They have gotten rid of the TakeOver brand. They're still using War Games. I guess that means Vince hates NXT 1.0 more than he hates WCW.
Wow.
Yeah, but they're doing old school versus new school for this year's War Games. So it's Ciampa, Gargano, Dunn, and Knight versus Breaker, Carmelo Hayes, Tony D'Angelo, and Grayson Waller. Before the two teams go to war, the fans get to determine who will compete in an NXT War Games Advantage ladder match this Tuesday on USA. The polls are now open. I'm wondering if it's a legitimate poll, because I kind of hope it is, because as we've seen before with Taboo Tuesday and Cyber Sunday, fans don't really know what they want until they get it and figure out they don't know what they want.
Yeah, yeah, the whole Roddy Piper tagging with Ric Flair thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where I don't even know what I want in this because I'm still getting to know all these new talents. Like, obviously, the whole story of Bron Breakker being Steiner's kid and everything, people have been following him a little closely. Carmelo Hayes is great to watch, and D'Angelo and Grayson Waller are all great as well. But like, let's not ignore, like, when did Pete Dunne become old school? Like, when did Pete Dunne become the old guard here? Because as far as I knew, wasn't he like one of the hottest parts of this new NXT as well? Like,
no, not the new NXT. No, definitely not the new NXT. He was there. He was just, he just has that coat of paint on him, as all those guys do. Now, the funny thing is, if you think about this, like all of these old school versus new school thing, you go to things like they tried this with, oh my goodness, I'm going to go back to WCW again and I can't.
New Blood?
Was it the New Blood? Was that what they were called?
The New Blood versus the Millionaires Club.
Was it Mike? Was that Mike Sanders? Was he in the New Blood then?
It was the Natural Born Thrillers.
All right. There you go. So there's that. And then also, also in Impact, they did that too with like the Millionaires Club, and they had the young guys versus the. Here's the thing. They've always made the mistake of the old guys winning.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, I think this might be the time though, because I can't see that happening here. Like, you know, the young guys have to win this because it's actually become political with NXT having to be perceived better, NXT 2.0 having to be perceived better than NXT 1.0.
Yeah, this is everything wrong with WWE's mentality towards this stuff. And we saw this when they turned the relaunch of ECW into a heel organization. You know, I don't know why they feel like we have to take something we love and turn it into something we hate, or try and have it be perceived as something we hate all of a sudden. But I guess they figure in the long run, that'll become the way fans become aligned to it. They're going for that very broad stroke, you know, and you'll know this term too, broadcasting versus narrowcasting,
right?
Where you can give me Ciampa Gargano 47, whatever, and I'll still love the match. It'll be great, but they're not worried about that. They're worried about, hey, look at these flashy new characters. Look at these young characters. Look at these incredible people. The old guys, yeah, they're not so good anymore. You know, we had their run with them, but look at this new shiny thing. It's going to be great.
The new shiny. Now, you know what? The first thing I thought of when you said new shiny thing was that damn egg from Monday. Oh, that's just, that is what WWE fans are now thinking. Mike, listen, okay, you hold on. For patrons, you're going to get a whole bunch more of Mike and I going over more from the week and also learn a little bit about him. For all of you that are listening on the podcast or listening on the radio, we got to say goodbye. We, of course, going to be back here next week, same time, same place. It's Sunday night's main event. Appreciate you listening. Find us online, patreon.com/SNME Radio, and get the extended versions of all of our shows and podcasts each and every day. We'll talk to you next week. Don't you dare miss it.
Do I get to do the thing?
If you want, go ahead.
Brother! Wow.
All right. That concludes our broadcast day. Are you, you're still there, right?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. It's funny because we just talked about, you brought up broadcasting and narrowcasting, right?
Yeah.
This is the narrow casting portion where I just record things and we talk to patrons.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've heard it before. So everyone's probably asking, who the hell is Mike McGuire and why is Agnew putting this guy on the show?
I have the same question, to be honest with you.
Well, you got to answer it, too. You got to answer the question. You are someone who we have traded messages for a long time, and I know you have. Listen, when did you actually, because you go back to listening to Lavransky and I on The Law as a radio guy. I've been calling you the grizzled radio veteran. But like, what era did you find the show? I'm always curious how people found it.
It was you, Lavransky, Pollock and Ting.
OK.
And I really delved into the show in the wave of podcasting, but I used to listen whenever I could to the actual show streaming wherever I was, because I loved the concept of wrestling radio shows. When I was in college, I attempted to do one just for the sake of doing it. And frankly, this has always been the dream radio show for me, is to be able to sit here and talk about wrestling and call it part of my career lexicon, which for 18 years now as a pro. I want to say I've never had the chance to really, really do. So this is, without sounding like I'm blowing so much smoke, I really am. This is really exciting for me to be a part of, man.
So you, because you've been on the FM side, have you done any, like you've been like more so a music jock, right? Because I've never got to do the FM side. I've never got to do that. I've never got to like throw the songs and do little bits in between. I've always had too much time to talk.
You know, it's funny. The time has been whittled away more and more. And as you listen to commercial FM radio, especially in markets like you're in, with Toronto and Montreal and all these places, you're going to notice that a lot of guys don't talk as much anymore because they're measured digitally through ratings called PPM, which, as we also like to call, the death of our industry. But at least from the broadcasting side, because, the great character bits, the great long breaks of real captivating material, they don't exist anymore. You know, everything you're tightening down to 40 seconds to a minute, unless you're in a market like Saskatoon where they actually unsubscribe from the ratings, which is really, really interesting because now it's kind of like everybody's ball game has changed and now they're doing whatever they want. But it's one of those situations where having the energy from songs can definitely change your day, can change your perception of your job going in. With you doing talk radio and even doing the trivia games and stuff like that, I mean, at least you have the entertainment of the games.
Yeah.
Where if you're doing just straight news like you are in your day job now, I mean, really, the stories can change your mood, can change the entire atmosphere of your business. So.
Well, that's why I stay with local news. So it's a lot of puppy dogs and ice cream. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to talk about a lot of every time I have to do a read on like a sexual assault or something like that. I'm like, man, it's just too much serious in the world. And that's why we escape to the world of wrestling, which is what you've been doing. I've been following along. And so this is kind of cool. So you get to talk about wrestling on the radio. I'm shocked that you never happened to get one of these going, though, in all the markets that you've worked in.
You know, the funny thing is I've always wanted to, but as our industry has been changing and shrinking exponentially, one of the biggest challenges has been finding the time. And I'm not saying that you're not a busy guy either, but to give you an idea, where I was last working, I was on the air in two, sometimes three different markets. And then on top of that, doing a lot of our graphics and our web stuff behind the scenes. I was kind of the Johnny go-to for whatever needed to be done as far as events, MCing, promotions, everything. So my biggest thing was if I was going to do this for two reasons, one, it was going to be in the hopes of being able to be consistent with it.
Right.
And
of course,
two, in the hopes of having the quality of audience and reach and everything else. Because the first thing that happens, whether you leave a job or not, you know, you've probably had this your whole life too. Why don't you start a wrestling podcast? Well, actually, I do one. If I'm Jason Agnew, you know, I do one of the most successful ones in the country. But, you know, for me, it's always been, why don't you do a wrestling podcast? And I had to say flat out, look, there's 9 million wrestling podcasts out there. You know, not to think that I'm that good, but it's a case of, how do I compete against some established brands out there? And so the kismet of you and I actually talking about working together now was remarkable to me, because I found myself in a situation where finally this is what I want to do. And if you remember the first message between you and I about this, I said flat out, like, look, man, I've got a home studio. If you need a guy to pull clips, like I'm happy to just help in any way whatsoever. And so to be sitting here talking to you in the capacity that we're talking is truly mind-blowing to me, and I'm really excited about it.
Well, listen, I mean, I agree with you. It's a completely oversaturated marketplace, and it's something that, I mean, we're just speaking to patrons right now, and we appreciate all of your support, because honestly, without the patrons, this thing isn't going on anymore. You know, we are on the radio, and I've always tried to keep the show to a radio-quality show, and then built in the podcast around with it, but try to make all the podcasts sound good. And yeah, if you start something new right now, like, unless you're an established name, unless you're, you know, Lance Storm doing a show, and you got your fan base around you and they want to hear what you have to say, like, unless you've got that track record in the industry, you're just another of many podcasts. So it's a tough go. What did you grow up watching? We did these things on Sunday Night's Main Event where we would have these roundtable talks with patrons, and I always wanted to know where people came from, what got them into wrestling. So what's your first wrestling memory and what did you grow up watching? I'm guessing it's WWE since you're Canadian.
Well, the funny thing is, yes and yes. It's funny because I'm labeled as Saskatchewan guy now, which I think is fair because I've been here for about 9 years. But I grew up mostly in central Alberta. And so I was right in the heart of Stampede country.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so for me, growing up watching WWF TV wasn't just growing up watching Hulk Hogan and everything else. In fact, I didn't get in until the later end of the big Hulkamania run, really. My first memory was actually sitting at my cousin's house because her relatives there, like her extended family, would all watch wrestling. And my first memory is watching the Honky Tonk Man make his way to the ring, knowing who Hulk Hogan was and everything else. And he had the Intercontinental Championship at the time. And I was trying to figure out, why does he have a belt like Hulk Hogan does? And then growing from there and starting watching it, and all of a sudden discovering, again, being from central Alberta, how many of these performers were literally just down the highway from me in Calgary. You can even go back to Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah.
I got to see the British Bulldogs on Stampede Wrestling TV when they came back after their first WWF run. Jason the Terrible, all these great wrestlers to come out of the original Stampede. You get back to Muckham Singh before the Bastion Booger contract and all these other names. So it was great because the television station from Calgary and Edmonton would both run Stampede Wrestling and then Maple Leaf Wrestling right afterwards. So you got this great peek into what I had no idea was independent wrestling at the time versus the biggest show in the world. So it gave me a great range growing up, and then discovering independent wrestling, going into college and everything else, getting to work in the scene a lot. Big ups to Kurt Sorokin and the Prairie Wrestling Alliance in Edmonton, who have had some great talents come through and make it all the way to the big show. And then even working in Saskatchewan here with High Impact Wrestling and with other organizations that have had shows come through and again have had talents. I said on the main show, I got to see Thunder Rosa when she was working for, a few hundred bucks and sleeping at the promoter's house before getting onto her next indie contract, and the big name we'd booked for that show was Ryback.
Oh boy.
So, I know. And you know what? I got to say this. He's out there on Twitter, but nice dude when he was there. He was perfectly fine to work with when he was there. But again, we were paying him, so I guess that's why. But
well, that doesn't necessarily always mean that they're nice, even if you pay them sometimes.
Yeah,
there are certain guys that are difficult. But that's good. You had a nice experience with Ryback. I'm happy about that. All right. So you're going to be someone who's kicking around. You're going to do next week's show with me as well. And for the next couple weeks. Now, I do have to ask you, what's up with the Ghostbusters stuff, dude? You look like you... Is this your... Like, I think for me, it's probably, Star Wars. But is Ghostbusters like your kid thing that has now come full circle with this latest movie, which I haven't seen, but I've only seen great things about, in particular with yourself. It seems to be greater than great.
Well, here's the thing. I was a Ghostbusters fan when it wasn't cool to be a Ghostbusters fan. I was the kid back in school. Actually, for any Ontario listeners out there, I should have you know, I'm not born and bred Albertan either. I'm actually a product of North York, Ontario, growing up in Armprior, Ontario, in the Ottawa Valley there. So I can tell you that the young childhood for one Mike McGuire, being a Ghostbusters fan, was not an easy go. And so for everybody that's talking about how cool it is to watch Ghostbusters now, y'all can kiss my butt because I brought you to the dance. but Ghostbusters for me has definitely been that thing. And back in, I can never remember if it was 2007 or 2009, 2007 for sure. I had Dan Aykroyd in my studio. He had just started off his partnership with Patron Tequila and the Canadian distribution. So if you're Dan Aykroyd, you're going to be Dan Aykroyd and you're going to promote your tequila around the world. And so he did a radio tour. And everybody's asking about Saturday Night Live and Blues Brothers and everything else. And nobody was asking him about Ghostbusters. So I asked him, I said, is there ever going to be a Ghostbusters 3? And Dan Aykroyd sat across the table from me. And he confirmed to me on my radio show, worldwide headlines. I had TMZ calling. I had people from Tokyo calling. Ghostbusters 3 was going to be a thing.
Really?
And he lied his face off to me. keep in mind the year, okay? 2007. Now, here's the thing. My friend Evan and I just podcasted about this, actually. You know, Dan has always been the guy to carry the torch for Ghostbusters
3. Well, Dan also wrote the original Ghostbusters as a project for him and John Belushi and Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, exactly. And so the funny thing is that he still owns stake in it today. So obviously he's going to promote it like crazy. But he had this vision of Ghostbusters 3, which was going to be an entirely CGI movie. And he sat there and explained this all to me. It's going to be CGI. The whole cast was going to voice it. We got Billy back, which was always the big question. Are they going to get Bill Murray back or not?
Uh-huh.
And then it didn't happen. The movie flopped. But what they decided to do was take all that work and make it into a video game. And that's when the Ghostbusters, the video game, came out in 2009. And it was to a lot of fans, the uncrowned Ghostbusters 3 movie, because you had all four original cast members. It's a great game. But for me, having that moment with Dan kind of relit everything with Ghostbusters, and then, you know, becoming this unofficial Ghostbusters expert because I was the guy that got the interview. I mean, I don't know anything more about it then than I did now, but I know a lot about it, you know. It's something where I'll always have had that moment, and Ghostbusters brings back a ton of good memories for me. So yeah, it can be your Star Wars, it can be your Star Trek, it can be whatever you grew up with loving. Ghostbusters is definitely it for me, but I will tell you this, and I haven't told you this until just now, Jason. There is another room in my house, and it is completely full of wrestling memorabilia.
Well, I mean, that's almost expected. like that was shocking or something.
No, but here's the thing. No, I don't think you fully understand, though. Like, okay. I mean, okay, I'm not the guy that, don't get me wrong, I'm not the guy that wouldn't spend, you know, thousands of dollars on guys' gear or something, but I just haven't gone that road. For me, it's been figures and memorabilia, but for me, it's always been about the memories the collectibles bring out. Like, some people are completionists. They have to have the entire set of this or entire set of that. I have these cabinets of figures that are literally just the eras that I grew up with. And so it traces. And I don't buy every wrestler that ever comes out. I buy the ones that I have memories of, you know? And it's funny, in the main show, we talked about Drew McIntyre trying to kill people with a sword. I have a Berserker figure because I'll never forget how scared I was when the Berserker dropped a sword in the middle of the ring trying to impale the Undertaker.
Oh boy, that's a
right.
That's deep a deep cut. I didn't even know Berserker had.
You thought your Tank Abbott cut was deep.
Yeah. What is you said you got the Berserker figure, but what would you say? I don't even know if you're going to be able to answer this question, but like, what is your that favorite piece of wrestling memorabilia that you have? Because I'm not a big memorabilia guy, but I know people have, you know, this special one. Whether I'm not saying most valuable, because that's bullshit. Yeah. Favorite piece.
I have a top three, and I don't know what order they're in. So if I can give you that, that'd be probably the best way to do it. Probably one that gets a lot of interest from hardcore fans is I have a turnbuckle pad from WrestleMania 8 that has a little bit of what we've established is Bret Hart's blood on the corner of it.
Okay.
And I've actually conversed with him about this. And I'll explain that in a second too. But yeah, I have this turnbuckle pad. I don't know why. I've always loved the ring, and I'm talking indie wrestling, WWE, AEW. There's something about the ring. It's that sacred space for us that we as fans get to watch. That's the stage. That's the proscenium arch. That's the area that we know for the most part, all the magic happens. Even the greatest promo ever that we just saw happened where? In the ring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the stage. So I've always loved the wrestling ring as a structure. So to have a piece of an actual wrestling ring that you know was at WrestleMania and everything else, that to me was a big deal. So I have that. I have a few pair that are signed by him, but I have a pair of Bret Hart sunglasses signed from an event that we did together. For those that don't know, I'm also the in-game host for the Saskatchewan Rush, the NLL. So you have the Toronto Rock, you have the Vancouver Warriors, all these different teams across Canada. So I'm the guy that does all the chattering on the mic for the Rush here. And we had Bret come to a game. The owner and VP of marketing at the time know that I'm a huge Bret Hart fan. So they gave me the job, the task, if you would, of being his liaison for the day, which was amazing because that's when I got the chance to finally kind of, you know, make buddies with him, which was a dream as a kid, and just super chill, dude, like amazing. You buy into all the, oh, Bret screwed Bret and everything else. But if you actually get to talk to the guy, it's, you're talking to a human, and he makes times for all his fans. He's a good dude. And I asked him, I said, Bret, I'm going to sound like a total nerd here, but could you do me a solid? And when you sign these, I know you used to put messages on the shades of every town you were in. And so if you could do that, I would be forever grateful. He's like, yeah, absolutely. So he wrote on it, to Mike Saskatoon, Where Dreams Come True, which was a throwback, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
Him winning his championship here, because I got to announce him in the building that he won his first world title in. So that, to me, not the most valuable, but right, it has that kind of like that goosebumpy feeling taking you back to when he won that title. I was enamored with that immensely, because I actually saw him wrestle for the first time the night before, or a couple nights before, in Red Deer, just before he got told he was going to be going to Flair for the title at that Saskatoon show. And that's a whole story for another day that I know he's told other places, but knowing that I was at the show where he got the phone call saying, you're going to win the title in Saskatoon. That's, yeah. So that was definitely a come around moment for me as well. And then third and final, this is a really strange one, but I have a Mexican wrestling mask from a Mexican wrestler who went by the name of Forajido, which means the outlaw. And I met him hosting a radio station trip in Puerto Vallarta. And I was doing what all wrestling fans do when they go to Puerto Vallarta, is looking for wrestling masks.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I started talking to this guy, but I wasn't asking for the one with like my favorite CFL team logo on it. I wasn't looking for the one with my favorite NHL or NFL team. I was asking for them by name.
Right.
You know, I was asking for Blue Demon, you know, Santos, all these guys. Right. And this one guy stops me. He's like, you know, Santos, you know, all these guys. I said, yeah. Oh, you should talk to Jorge. So I go talk to Jorge, who turns out this little tea kettle of a guy comes out just stacked, right? Like, just looks like Taz, maybe a little wider.
Okay.
But without the mohawk, and he's wearing the typical resort merchant, you know, white shirt, black pants and everything else. And he tells me that he runs a promotion in Puerto Vallarta, and that he does indie shows and stuff like that, and they run all sorts of stuff. And I'm like, wait a minute, do you have a ring? He goes, yes. And we're doing the sniff test, because I've been around indie wrestling enough, you know, and you know this too from being smart to the business. You can do a sniff test around people who know what they're talking about with wrestling and people who think they know what they're talking about wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do the sniff test and we find out that we're both legit. And I said, look, if I can talk the resort into it, how would you feel about doing a show here? And within 2 days, Jason, I convinced this multi-million dollar resort to let me bring in this ragtag group of Mexican wrestlers.
That's insane. That is insane.
Hold on. It gets better. It gets better. Okay. He wanted to do like a 10 match show, or like he wanted all his guys in, everything. Right. And I'm like, I can't give you 10 matches. Like, we, you know, two, three at the tops. Right. But we have to follow the traditions of Mexican wrestling. Two out of three falls. You know, you have the Rudos, the Technicos, everything else. They end up letting us set up on the beach. I will send you a link to the photos. And maybe we can post them on SNME or something, but we end up setting up this beautiful oceanside pro wrestling show. I set up a boxing ring. Okay. Because this guy didn't have a wrestling ring. Like most Mexican indies, he had a boxing ring with no give whatsoever. The old, you know, the old, loungers that they have on the beach. There's like, you know, there's always like 50 or 100 of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those pads that go on them, the cushions, that's what he was using for his padding underneath a Corona canvas. So this was his wrestling setup. So I look at it and I'm like, this is terrible. I go to Home Depot, because there's a Home Depot in Puerto Vallarta, which always made me laugh. I don't know why it makes me laugh. There's, you know, they're people, they have stores. But I go and I buy everything I can to fix the ring up the best I know from setting up indie rings across Western Canada. And so I redo his ropes for him. I redo his turnbuckles for him. It's 35 degrees. I'm in jeans because it's a wrestling, or it's a ring, so there's sharp metal corners everywhere. And we set up this wrestling show. Agnew, we had the time of our lives. And I'll tell you this right now, man. The only thing that made it better, I got to do a run-in at the end.
Oh, boy. Oh, you were guy, huh? You were that guy.
I had to be that guy. I had to be that guy. They asked. I was like, yeah, I got to be that guy. But I did it under the hood and everything else. We took the hood off. I was ring announcing the show before. So it was a nice reveal for the rest of the fans. But I promised them $500, which is all they asked for. They asked for $500 US. Luckily, just before the main event, this is the old indie wrestling carny coming in. I said, look, we have some Mexican wrestlers, and they were good. They did a great show on the beach, by the way. They did fantastic matches. They hit hard. We had a guy that looked like a Rey Mysterio. He was flying around all over the place. We did a pass the hat and managed to get them $2,500.
Whoa, that's awesome.
Was the best part. So as a thank you, and this is why I say it's one of my most valued wrestling memories, Forahito actually gave me his mask, which he didn't wrestle that night. I mean, he's long done from wrestling, but he gave me one of his masks. He gave me photos of him working with it. Probably the most famous guy we know, which ties back to Bret Hart, was El Dandy. hey, who are you to doubt El Dandy? but you know what? I've got these great memories of being a part of this Mexican wrestling company. The best part was knowing these guys all have full-time jobs, and unlike a lot of places, Canada, you know, you don't call in sick when you got a job in Mexico. You don't miss a day. And these guys all took the day off to come wrestle for us. So I wanted to make sure that they were taken care of afterwards. And yeah, I mean, these people are at a, you know, couple $1,000 a week resort. You can afford a couple $100 for these guys. So they did. And it was awesome.
That's phenomenal. All right. Well, listen, we got to wrap up today's show, but that's an incredible story that I never thought we'd get to off me saying, what's your favorite piece of memorabilia? That's amazing. Listen, you're back with me next week. We're going to keep in touch. We're going to watch all the things that other people aren't going to. You're okay with that, right? To sit
absolutely.
Through. Okay, great. Okay, good stuff. Yeah. All right. He's Mike McGuire. You know me. I'm Agnew. And we'll talk to all you patrons next week. And by the way, yes, Mark and I have got the midweek mark out, and we've got all of our strip of shows. Joe and Dan, Boris and Matt, all of them are doing their thing. And I will also let you know, Boris and Matt, I believe, will be doing a podcast. We're not going to be doing a live there, but we'll be doing a podcast after the War Games show, which is coming up next Sunday, I believe, right, is War Games.
That's it.
So they'll be doing a podcast after that, and we'll cover it next week and preview it here on Sunday night's main event. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.